Robert Reese, who got me thinking about the five hindrances. He did a very nice half-day workshop on Saturday on the five hindrances and how studying those hindrances augment one's 12-step study. And he did a good job, and it got me thinking about it, and this is my riff as I looked again at the five hindrances. Buddha talks about the five hindrances many times in his life. And it's become a standard Theravada teaching, and of course we study it in a somewhat different way in our Zen literature as well. Hindrance means something that clouds us, that covers us, like looking through the world, you know, looking at the world through gauze. The practice of seeing these hindrances, looking at what's clouding us from our direct experience with the world, with the universe, with each other, is our practice. And when we're no longer hindered, that's our liberation. When I get to the Zendo at 5:30 in the morning these last few weeks, you know, School Street looks just straight east, and the glow of the sunrise is just starting, so there's sort of a blue glow to the sky. And on these cloudless spring mornings, the moon has been big and has its own brightness, its own light, its luminosity. There is a star or two that can be seen with the bright moon. Maybe the planets, maybe Venus is there glowing in its silent orbit around the sun that's going to peak up in the next half hour or so. You know, it kind of looks like one of those Maxfield Parrish paintings. The colors are really kind of shimmering. And it's, you know, dark but shimmering, you know, like those Maxfield Parrish paintings. And, you know, on a good morning, I really enjoy seeing that view. I'm the observer, and I really appreciate all of that happening every morning, silently. No beginning, no end. It's just out there. On other mornings that are also good mornings, I'm subtly aware of my own luminosity, my own light, my own participation in that dynamic functioning. I'm not so much the observer, but really I'm in my own gravitational connection to this great orb of the earth. And I'm part of that whole scene, and my own internal orbit is around the Zen center, and I make my way down the path as part of my morning orbit. So it's a great way to start the morning. Other mornings, and they're good mornings as well, we have a nice mist, and there's just this pearlescent glow, you know, no particular direction of the sun, no particular light from the moon, but it's not bad. But there's something that's obscuring my direct visual connection with the moon, with Venus, with the sun. You know, I've still got that gravitational hold onto the Earth, but you can tell just barely. I'm practically levitating by that time. But sometimes there's a hindrance. Sometimes there's an obscuration. Maybe that's another way to look at hindrance. Gauze or the mist, the sea mist, the clouds, the fog that keeps us from that clear seeing, the clear vision, the clear knowing of our part in the universe. So Buddha says that there are five hindrances. That keeps us from our clear knowing. Sensual desires, ill will, having angry feelings or unskillful feelings towards other people, ill will, a sense of restlessness or worry, our own sloth and torpor. Just we're too tired to pay attention. And then doubt comes up. Doubt comes up in our sitting. Is our sitting really our liberation? Is this the right path? Those are the traditional five hindrances. We're instructed to just pay attention to those. Not something to get excited about. We're just asked to take a look at when those five come up in our lives. Pay attention to those. Maybe in our meditation, maybe we'll catch ourselves at work or at home with ill will, with a harsh feeling towards someone else might come up, and we'll go, oh, that's one of the five hindrances. Ill will has arisen in me. So we're just asked to take a look. You know, I've got lots of, with that view that we have on School Street here at 5:30 in the morning, it makes me appreciate Buddha's awakening, you know, seeing that morning star arise when on the sixth day of his meditation under the Bodhi tree, and seeing that the morning star and feeling that connection between the far distant star and the very ground that he was sitting on. And, you know, in those previous 6 days, Mara had appeared in front of Buddha with all of the hindrances, with all of the possible distractions. Mara brought lots of sensual desires to distract the Buddha, reminded Buddha of lots of things he might have ill will about in his life, maybe filled the Buddha's mind with restlessness and worry, or maybe, you know, said, Buddha, aren't you getting a little tired sitting there? Isn't sloth and torpor part of your 6 days of sitting? So that was Mara's appearance before the Buddha in those 6 days. And the Buddha just looked up and said, Mara, I see you. And it all vanished. It was just noticing the hindrances as they appeared before Buddha. Mara, I see you. And the work is almost done in practicing with the hindrances. I see you. You know, in the world of in the world of 12-step recovery, a person who is struggling with the disease of addiction might be in the pre-contemplative stage. He or she is not even thinking about getting into recovery. He or she might be dwelling quite happily in the hindrances of his or her life. And then the next movement is the pre-contemplative stage, you know, which is kind of like this fly starts buzzing around saying, I've got to do something different. This isn't the way I want to go. They're starting to think about getting into recovery. And that pre-contemplative stage means you're halfway there. Because, I mean, you're almost there. That's almost the whole thing. Because the next step is active recovery. The next step, you've done it. You're working a program. You're staying clean and sober as much as possible, but it's right there in the foreground. Your practice is right there, right in front of you. So that pre-contemplative stage is almost all the work. And that's why Buddha could, you know, in the midst of, you know, all those great pictures of Mara tempting and distracting the Buddha, you know, have lots of color and lots of drama in those pictures, if you've ever seen them. That's why the Buddha can just say, Mara, I see you, and the whole thing kind of falls away. So that's one way to work with these five hindrances to our liberation, is just to notice them. Just, I see you. Oh, I'm tired. I see you. I see you. It's slowing me down. This isn't where I want to be. And the next action you take is done with that enlightened view of your body and mind. There are traditional antidotes to the five hindrances that practices. And I bet we've all been in a place of ill will, of monumental ill will, that as much as we say, I see you, Mara, it doesn't just drop away. So when we're still really interested in dropping ill will, we can do a practice. We can put on, we can cultivate another stage of mind, another state of mind. And the Buddha and his and the teachings that we've inherited from the Buddha instruct us to cultivate loving kindness. If there's a particular person that we're directing our ill will to, can we then just do a visualization of loving kindness? May that person be filled with loving kindness. May she be well. May she be peaceful and at ease. May she be happy. Can we take on that formal practice of the antidote to ill will? Sensual desire, you know, gluttony, when it's 4:30 and we can't wait until 5 o'clock to start preparing our dinner, and we know that someone has brought donuts in the break room, when gluttony arises in us and we say, oh, you know, that's clouding my direct experience of just being here in my desk, finishing my paperwork, of just feeling my body as it sits on my chair. My gluttony is clouding that experience. We can practice concentration. We can turn to our paperwork. We can turn to our list of phone calls that we still have to make, and with a more concentrated mind, we can practice the antidote to gluttony or any other sensual desire that might come up by increasing our concentration. If we can't get to sleep at night because of restlessness or worry, we can practice tranquility or joy. The practice is usually remembering a more tranquil time or remembering a more joyful time in our life, and trying to fill our mind and body with those memories and cultivate tranquility and joy. When we're feeling sloth and torpor, we might turn up the energy in whatever we should be doing. So we practice energy. You know, what do we do here? And, you know, at 5:45 in the morning, when we're finally in this posture and we're facing the wall and the lights are dim, and, you know, we've only been awake for a half hour or so, we're still kind of sleepy. And what happens when we find ourselves kind of sinking forward? What can we do in our meditation practice increase the energy, to increase our awareness? What was the word that came up in the sesshin? We can be
vigilant.
It was another situation. We were going to be fearless. We were going to be, when that first conceptual thought came up, we were going to cut it off.
Zero tolerance.
Zero tolerance. We can say to ourselves, I now have zero tolerance for sleepiness. We can start paying close attention to our breath. You've given us other great practices. Your practice from Japan, where you start the meditation with 3 deep breaths to just get you following the breath, get you dwelling in the body. So that's how we might practice more energy in our meditation when we're feeling sloth and torpor. And doubt, when doubt comes up, you know, we've put great energy into our meditation, and at 6:15, after we've been practicing hard, we go, is this really liberation for me? Is this really the practice for me? And the Buddha encourages us to investigate Dharma. You know, we might not work out our great doubt in that period of meditation, but you know, we've got a library full of books that we've collected over the years in our study, and we might look in our books where we've underlined, where we've been inspired in the past, and say, these are my values. I think this really is my practice, and the investigation of Dharma is our way of doubt, is a way of working with doubt. You know, I've told this story. Stop me if you've heard this story more than 5 times. I know you like it. I know I like telling it. But you know, I was there at Tassajara on my 5th day of Tongariyo, and great doubt came up. I painted this bleak picture of Orioki, you know, our formal meals, and I said, if I have to do one more meal chant, if I have to open those cloths one more time, I'm going to scream. And I was just, you know, even though I'd sat there for 5 days so that I could then start the 100-day practice period, I'd almost finished those 5 days. I was planning, you know, I'll finish this Tongariyo, and then I'm just going to apologize to people and say I've really got to leave, and I'd take the next kind of shuttle out, you know, I imagined I was going to have to come back and apologize to the community. You know, it just wasn't for me. Those 5 days of Tongariyo were very good because I really realized that this was not my practice. But you know, it wasn't the end of those 5 days. You know, I still had the rest of the day to go. You know, I started thinking, well, you know, I really do like those early mornings, walking down the path to the Zendo, you know, that Maxfield Parish. I really do like starting the day with this practice, with this, you know, feeling a little more connected to my world. You know, those are aspects of practice that have been real valuable to me. So I investigated for the rest of the day the Dharma teachings that I'd had over the preceding years, and it seemed to be the antidote to the doubt that had arisen so strongly in those periods. So those are the traditional antidotes, the traditional states of mind that one might cultivate when the five hindrances arise. You know, first start looking at those five hindrances. First say, I see you. I'm aware of you. And then if you need to move on to these other states of mind, you know, work with concentration, loving kindness, joy and tranquility, energy and zeal, and remembering your Dharma studies.